Hey, everybody. Welcome to Following the Way podcast. We're your host. I'm JC. That's Chris. That's James. And we're excited to be here with you on episode number 4 of Following the Way podcast. This episode is going to be called Lanes, Not Levels. And I'm super excited about today's guest. We'll introduce you to him here in just a minute. Before we get into the episode, fellas, how we doing? Chris, you're a world traveler, man. Welcome back to the land of the free refill.
Thank you. Yeah, I just got back from Turkey and Rome. Did a pilgrimage tour, study tour. It was pretty epic. I'll tell you what, man. Yeah, life changing.
I about said, did you eat any turkey while you were in Turkey? That's the dumbest dad joke.
Listen. Come up with. I was hoping you would ask that. No, I did not. But I did have bad meat while I was there, and I got sick. I did. So it wasn't turkey. But it was bad meat in Turkey. So yeah, but it was great, man. Life changing. I think everybody needs to go on a pilgrimage one day. You know, a lot of our listeners, they have their big vacations. I would highly recommend. I know you, JC, has taken folks to Israel on a pilgrimage, but a pilgrimage, it just takes your faith to a whole different level. And you get to experience things that you've never experienced. You get to see things you've never seen, and it just takes your faith to a different level, and it takes your lens of scripture just to a different place. So it was life-changing, man. Yeah.
I loved your post, you and your wife in that church with the pastors from Russia and all of y'all gathering there.
Isn't that cool? Laodicea, man, where that's the crazy part. I never really knew this is, you know, Laodicea, the church that Jesus in Revelation calls out as the lukewarm church, apparently they listened to Jesus, repented, and the church kind of grew up and ended up being a really important place there in the 300s. And that was the church. And that church, I met a pastor from Russia in the church in Laodicea. Pretty cool.
That's awesome. I think if we ever take a Following the Way podcast pilgrimage to Turkey, me and you, Chris, specifically, because the one time that I went to Turkey, I was on a plane full of bald-headed dudes that came back not bald-headed, but they had these little dots all around their head. So maybe we could take a hair implant trip to Turkey.
dude, I saw them. It's wild, man. Or people with the nose jobs. Nose jobs and hair plugs. Yes.
James, you ain't got to worry about that. You look like Wolverine over there, man. You got hair growing on top of hair.
That's the only way you're surviving up here, man.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, buddy, how's life in Michigan?
Good. It's above 60 degrees a couple times already. And so surviving pastoral ministry this week, it's like after Easter, it's always like, I don't know if it's like that with you guys, but after Easter as a pastor is always like, there's just a ton of fires to put out. It seems like after every Easter, it's just like, goodness. So, surviving.
Above 60. That's hilarious. We've been swimming since the 1st of April. My kids' lips have been blue a couple times, but we got the pool open and they are absolutely enjoying life.
Yeah,
we had snow last Monday here. Snow.
That's crazy talk.
Yeah, we had snow too. I think it was Monday. We had that Sunday, I think it was. It came through.
Yeah, we got it after you did. Thanks, James.
That's crazy. I literally just got a notification. We're under a tornado watch for the next like 8 hours. So I woke up this morning to the house vibrating. It was like, you remember that TV show? What was that? Twilight Zone, where they were flying through the storm and it was just flashing in the plane windows. I don't know. I've heard about it. Chris, you're older than me. I figured you would have known what Twilight Zone is.
I know.
Final Destination. Maybe that was it. Anyhow, that's what it looked like in our bedroom. My daughter came in. She's like, who's strobe lighting outside? I said, Jesus is. Just go back to bed. Oh, goodness. Well, I'm excited about today's episode. And I want to kind of ask a question right up front to those who are listening, because there seems to be this notion that following Jesus is supposed to feel like climbing a corporate ladder. I don't know who came up with this. But as we pastor, as we get to know people, it's like somewhere along the way, a lot of us picked up this idea that spiritual growth looks like promotion. Like you get saved, that's entry level, you start serving, okay, you're moving up, you lead a group, now we're talking, and then you get a title, and it feels like you have arrived. And before you know it, we've turned discipleship into this weird mix of church and LinkedIn, updating our spiritual resume, measuring maturity by visibility, getting the approval of man, if you will. all the while we're wondering if what I'm doing is making a difference. Like, am I really going somewhere? Nobody says it out loud, but I believe that everybody feels it. Like, if I'm not advancing, I'm failing. If I'm not leading, am I less mature? If I'm not seen, do I even matter? Now, I believe this is the tension that we want to lean into today, because a lot of you listening to this podcast, you've already walked away from maybe an unhealthy system. You've stepped out of legalism. You've found freedom in Jesus. You've let go of that performance-driven faith. But if we're honest, some of that latter mindset has come with you. You may be free on one hand, but you're still measuring, comparing, and wondering if you are behind. Discipleship, it's never meant to be a ladder in the first place. And the goal has never been to be like reaching a certain level, but rather following a person. Following Jesus looks less like climbing and more like walking. And this is the conversation that we're going to have today. We've got a special guest with us. Our very first guest on the podcast, his name is Chad Williams, pastor at Building 28 and the executive director of the Missio Collective. And he shared something at a conference that I was at a few months back that struck me and stuck with me. And it's this idea of lanes, not levels. And I knew immediately when I heard this talk that we were going to have a conversation on the podcast. And so today we have a guest, our first guest, and we're going to see how this goes. His name's Chad, and we'll be talking to him right after this. Y'all ready? Let's go.
Thank you for joining us on Following the Way, a podcast about following Jesus, being shaped by his way, and learning to live freely and faithfully.
Hey, guys. Today's guest with us is Chad. He's a pastor down in Florida and unfortunately a Georgia Tech fan, but we will forgive him for that. But he has a heart for discipleship, and I was able to listen to his lesson on lanes and not levels and discipleship and formation. And we agreed that it was going to be a great topic for us to discuss as we talk about formation and followers of the way. And so, Chad, would you just introduce a little bit about you, your family, what you do, where you're from, and just introduce yourself to our audience?
Yeah, well, as a Georgia Tech fan, I have lived a tortured existence for sure. I grew up in the Atlanta area. I actually spent the first 10 years or so of my working life with Chick-fil-A corporate, and was heavily involved there. I was actually a grand opening coordinator for Chick-fil-A. And so I planted Chick-fil-A's before I planted churches. It's way easier to plant Chick-fil-A's than churches for sure.
But can we get a quote from that? Like, that's awesome.
My pleasure.
Exactly. But it was a really formative time in my life. The Lord called me into ministry in my early 20s, mid 20s, began to make that transition. And then in my late 20s, I planted a church called Highview Church there in the Atlanta area in the western part of the suburbs in a town called Villarica, Georgia, and planted that church. The church has been just a testimony to God's faithfulness. It really has. It was a wonderful experience and a great time there. Love those people. Love that church family. But then about a year and a half ago or so, the Lord began to kind of move in my heart, and eventually he led us here to Building 28 Church in Clearwater, Florida, and that is where I've been serving for the last year, making disciples, and then recently was a part of the formation of something called Missio Collective that JC mentioned earlier. Really excited about a family of churches that are committed to making disciples, multiplying leaders, and planting churches. And so I have three girls. I have Lydia, who is 8, Reagan 5, and Grayson 3. Married to my wife Kaylee, who is an incredible woman, and we're happy to be here in sunny Florida.
It's awesome. I don't know how you're in Florida and a Georgia Tech fan, but it is what it is.
It's a great talk about team. Cold weather too. I'm just like, what is this?
Yuck. Well, Chad, I was honored to be part of the Practically Pastoring Conference, where you were one of the keynote speakers. And this idea of lanes, not levels. And I would love for you to unpack that. Kind of where did that idea of lanes, not levels come from? And what are you seeing in churches that made you realize something needed to change?
Yeah, I think a lot of it came from my time first in the corporate world. Seeing the corporate structure that's very levels oriented and is kind of presented as a ladder of positions to continue mm-hmm. climbing. And so every rung you climb was a victory in that particular setting. But then when I made a transition into ministry, it really began to sink into my heart, this idea of lanes, not levels, as I watched really faithful people feel like failures for not continuing to climb another position rung in a local church. And I kept seeing believers who, man, they loved Jesus. They were growing. They were consistent. They were influential in their churches. They were reaching people for Christ. They were making disciples. But because they weren't moving up in status or in position within a local mm-hmm. body, they assumed that something was wrong with them. And something about that stuck with me, and I began to kind of look at there's got to be a better way. And what have we taken consciously or subconsciously from the business world and a corporate mindset? And how have we kind of stuffed that into a church context where it doesn't actually work? It doesn't actually make disciples or create what we're after. And so, yeah, it was a lot of kind of business experience, then seeing something off in how that translated in church context and wanting to see something different and something better. And through a lot of conversations with fellow elders and local pastors all over the Southeast over the last few years, it became clear to me something needed to change.
One question I was just wondering, like, as you train, you talk about churches, and how do churches unintentionally build this into the nature? Because I think this is not just, it's basically baked into our culture as Americans. It's like, it's this capitalistic, I'm going to move up in my career. And we've just kind of adopted that. I think like the history of this comes from the factory owner in like the 1900s. And then basically there's a book that really was like studying how to get the most output of your. And so now we've created like step programs within our churches, and like, you know, here's step one and here's step two, step three. And we've kind of adopted the cultural aspect of discipleship. Like everything is linear, and it's not always linear. You know, discipleship and spiritual formation is not always linear. A lot of times it's cyclical, you know? So I guess the question is like, where do you see this? How does this get baked in? Is it cultural? Is it intentional? You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would say yes. I think you're dead on. Yeah. I think there's certainly a cultural aspect to this for sure. And in a corporate setting or a military setting, a more hierarchical structure, I can think of a lot of different settings where, quite frankly, ladders make a lot of sense. Because ladders organize people. They just don't form them.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. discipleship is fundamentally a formation activity. It's not an organization, you know, activity at the end of the day. So I think seeing how we've taken a lot of times these corporate ideas and concepts and wed them to biblical principles and kind of dressed them up a little bit and then sold them to the church, I think a lot of that has come from it. I think it's a good intention, but lay leaders who had a lot of experience in the business world, who spoke into some of that over the years, churches who were seeking to grow. I think the Seeker Church movement had a big part in this as well. As you're dealing with really complex organizations and you need to organize, ladders make a lot of sense. And I think that's just kind of the way it goes. So I think there's a host of factors as to how this became synonymous with discipleship in the local church. But at the end of the day, ladders and lanes are just trying to do two different things. And one organizing principle with ladders doesn't always work in a formation principle with lanes for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. I listened to your pod on this. It was really challenging to me. I come from a pretty structured background in organizational leadership, and I was really challenging in a good way. I like it. Anytime you're challenged is a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. I was thinking about this one. I had a conversation with a mentor of mine, and he said, Chris, we've adopted the pipeline language, leadership pipeline language. He says, that's very utilitarian and militaristic. And he said, I get the heart of it. And there's some really good people behind some of that are promoting. And I have friends that are in that space. But he said, isn't it more of a pathway than it is a pipeline? And so that really stuck with me. And then listening to you is like, yeah, there's something about this, but let me press a little bit in regards to the ladder. Aren't there some redemptive pieces to it as well? Haven't you seen some, as people have kind of moved through maybe the pipeline or the ladder, there are stories of success and redemption through that. So do you throw that out, or do you just say, hey, how do you adopt maybe the lanes and the ladders? Have you ever processed? This is just some of the things I've been processing in as we develop our own pathway, if you will.
Yeah, it's a great question. Yeah, I think that tension is very real and even necessary to feel. I think the ladders are necessary from an organizational decision-making matrix kind of point of view. I think you actually need ladders in a church. I just don't think that should be the primary way we're discipling people. So for example, lanes not levels is certainly not a anarchical, anarchy reigning concept at all in that way. It's more about the lanes being a better paradigm to think through development, and using then the ladders, the organizational structure, the hierarchical structure. So whether it be if you're congregational, church, then your congregation's at the top of that structure with Jesus as the head, of course. And if you're elder governed, you get the idea. Like the ladders themselves are not, they're not bad. We've just been using ladders for the wrong reasons and then wondering why they fail us at the end of the day. And so I think, ladders have their place. And I would even say celebrating when a young man who aspires to the office of elder one day becomes an elder. There's a very real sense in which he's now been elevated to a lofty place, by the Lord. And at the same time, he's assuming a tremendous responsibility and now has that weight on him that we should obviously celebrate that. And so that's one example of I think there's a place where ladders from an organizational standpoint serve us very well. It's when we apply them in formation settings that they begin to break down because we're asking them to do something they just weren't built to do, if that makes sense.
I think you have a really unique perspective coming from the corporate world to see this, because guys like me who maybe been in church ministry for 30 years and you basically become boxed in that this is how we've done it. And now you come out of the corporate world saying, hey, this is how we've done it. And I don't know if this is the best thing to apply in formational discipleship. There's pieces of it that can work, but let me help you see what I see. That's really, you have a really unique perspective. I appreciate that.
Well, one thing that for me kind of was the kind of thing that sealed the deal for me, and I think I mentioned this in that talk from the Practically Pastoring, was this example of an 85-year-old woman on the front row who's the biggest prayer warrior in the church. What do you as a pastor view as success in her discipleship? And wrestling with that question rules out the ladder system altogether. Because for me, as a complementarian, I have a whole nother set of issues, but the reality of it is, this 85-year-old woman is not the ultimate end of her discipleship journey, is not going to be lead pastor or whatever the top of the rung in your local church hierarchical leadership structure is. There's got to be something else that we're pushing her towards. There's got to be some other version of success. And we also know, quite frankly, I don't know if this is true for you guys. It's certainly true here. Just be like, the lead pastor is not necessarily the godliest, most Christ-like person in the whole church. I think we've all been around ministry long enough to know that. So yeah. We climb a ladder of godliness and become lead pastor one day. Like, that's not how this works either.
Except at Hope.
People I know are
except at Hope.
Yeah, right.
Or JC is.
The top rung is interpretive dance coordinator, baby. If you reach that, dude, you're like, you're in.
Yes.
I love it.
Yeah,
you know, that's it. Most churches will never say it out loud, but people feel like if I'm not leading, I must not be growing. If I'm not platformed, then I must not matter. If I'm not advancing, then I must be failing. And this is that because it is taught that you've got to step up the ladder. And that creates all kinds of different feelings and attitudes. There's comparison game. And we know that when you start comparing, man, you it's going to come up just disgusting. Like, you're going to feel horrible about who you are, your identity. You'll start living for acceptance rather than from acceptance. There's insecurity that comes in. There's burnout. You know what happens when burnout hits? You stop doing what's right. You start doing what's easy. You fake spirituality. It just becomes very facade, like you're just going through the motions. And what this creates is title chasing. And that was the culture I grew up in. Like, it was, I wanted a title. I wanted that word pastor thrown after my name. So in your thinking, how does level thinking damage people's spirituality, Chad?
Yeah, it turns discipleship into performance.
Yeah.
It turns discipleship into asking the question, am I moving up? Over, am I obeying Jesus?
Mm-hmm.
And so when position becomes the goal, formation becomes secondary to promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And so position-oriented thinking in that way is actually probably doing more damage in our church than it is inspiring true godliness in anyone. Mm-hmm. And what happens is, eventually, when only the visible achievers are seen and celebrated, the invisible faithful stop being treasured.
Wow!
That happens so often in church. But the reality of it is, though, every single pastor I've ever talked to, and I spend so much time with pastors all of the time, like, they've got 10, 15 people they can name off the top of their head that are the epitome of faithfulness and service. And most of them don't hold lofty positions at all. Mm-hmm. But some of the people who are first in, last out, are some of your godliest people. And they have no desire to be a lead pastor or a staff pastor or anything else. And so thinking, like, how do we serve those people? They have no interest in being pushed up a hierarchical ladder of success and position. What are we pushing them to? And the answer's got to be Christ-likeness. And the analogy I use a lot is, if you call me and I'm, you know, on my way to Disney World, I'm on I-4 heading that way, you're going to ask me, where are you going? You're not going to ask me what lane I'm in. You won't care. You'll be like, where are you heading? And in discipleship, like, we all have an answer. We're heading towards Christ-likeness. Like, that's the destination. Like, that's where we're heading. And that's the most important thing. The lane I'm traveling in is completely irrelevant to you. You don't care if I'm in the slow lane, the middle lane, the fast lane, doesn't matter. It's where are you going? And so when we get directionally oriented with discipleship instead of positionally oriented, it just changes the way we think through formation and what we're really trying to get people to do and believe and go from there.
I was thinking about I listened to your pod, and then I'm kind of a history guy, and I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to that. And I look at, like, the spiritual formation and, like, how it's happened through America. You look at, like, the 1900s and your early 1900s, the Industrial Revolution, where output becomes a big thing. You know, people are, the fathers are transitioning from the homes and to now driving into work. And that was a huge shift in discipleship formation. You know, most of the time fathers were at home, you know, even working from home and, or having, like, a workshop in the home, to now going and driving into factories. And then you see, like, the rise of suburbs. And then you see, like, you know, the kind of the spiritual formation that shifted in America with the great revivalism, you know, the stadiums, the mass evangelism, the decisionism, you know, the music that would draw them in. You think of like Moody and Ira Sankey and Billy Graham. And then like you've seen the Bill Hybels movement, and you've seen like this more of this platform model. And one of the things that I've really seen is we have shifted the emphasis in our churches, I think almost unknowingly, to activity instead of intimacy. Like, I don't want you to be active. Like we set up the parameters, like the benchmarks. Do you attend on Sunday mornings? Do you serve on somewhere in your church? Do you give? You can do all of those things and not love Jesus at all. Like why, how is, you know, so that standard has been kind of like that. It's almost like a cultural formation that we have now shifted almost unknowingly. And the problem that I see is it creates, not only does it, I think God uses it not because of, but in spite of, but there's a lot of casualties to this ladder system. There's a lot of people, like, I mean, that's a big movement now. Like, you're talking about the N-O-N-E's, the nuns, or, you know, I like to call them the duns, like the deconstructive or the decluttering movement of people that have just been burned. I mean, they started in church, they got busy in church, then they got burned out, and then they got hurt. And I mean, there's a whole group that, I mean, that's just done. And then they equate, like, they're done with Jesus, but I'm like, mainly you're probably just done with a system that misrepresented Jesus. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, pulling that over into pastoral ministry, I don't have any data on this, but I just anecdotally, I don't think it'd be a stretch to say, I think the second biggest contributor to really, godly men, faithful, gifted men leaving the ministry, outside of moral failure, something happening where they're disqualified, would be actually a ladder failure.
Mm-hmm.
I feel pretty certain in saying that, because I know a lot of guys that, because they bought into and were sold the ladder mentality of, if I'm never a lead pastor, then I didn't make it to the summit. The more they feel like they turned around and went back after second base camp or whatever it might be, and they never climbed the top, they feel like they've basically been made to feel like failures, even though they are doing exactly what God is calling them to do. So because they were never promoted to the highest position in a church, they feel like they failed. When the reality of it is, though, the system failed in communicating to you that that's a failure. It could be you're doing exactly what God wants you to do in your local church. And again, like, when you build a system that rewards titles, don't be surprised when people build their identity on them. And so a lot of guys who never attain that, whatever you want to call that final rung, leave ministry very discouraged or feeling like, you know, how many guys, like JC, how many guys do you know that were amazing student pastors, kind of never found that next thing, that next rung, whatever it is, and they don't know what to do with their lives, because they feel like they're aging out of student ministry at the same time, and there's this pressure to go somewhere, do something, or go up or whatever. So
the language we always hear is stepping stones. Like, oh, I'm using this as a stepping stone to where the senior pastorate is the grandiose level that you can achieve. You know, you said something that I wrote down and it stuck, is that levels organize people, but they don't develop people. And, you know, I think where we go with this is it's a discipleship issue. You know, that was a word in the culture that we grew up in the Independent Fundamental Baptist Church. Discipleship was a dirty word. I mean, I think some of them thought discipleship was a four-letter word. We just didn't talk about it. You get saved, you tithe, you serve, but there's no discipleship. And I'll be honest, the first time I remember hearing the word discipleship and hearing about growth in following the way of Jesus was when I hit college and I started having some mentors that were speaking in and discipling me. And I was like, whoa, you know, my whole goal was just, I got to be a youth pastor, and then I got to be an executive pastor, and then a lead pastor. And I've arrived, and, you know, I get the big paycheck then. But it's a discipleship issue that happens within the structure of what we're doing that really matters.
Yeah, my fear, you know, with the ladder system that you've described, and I that's exactly how I've always understood it to be, is we teach men how to climb a ladder of position rather than walk a pathway of Christlikeness. So when that's the way of success, I'm gonna get to the highest rung on the ladder, and then I'll have a paycheck that can bring my wife home. She won't have to work, or I'll be able to get the house, or the kids can go to the decent school. Like when the goal is that aspirational positional language, and that's what we're attaching ourselves to, we teach men how to climb a ladder and get the next job, but not become like Christ. And those two things aren't always the same thing. We know that. And so it's also, I think, a big contributor to why you see a lot of guys, they spend 2 years somewhere, they spend 2 years somewhere else, they spend 2 years somewhere else.
Yep.
And
yep.
I was just doing some hiring here, and I'm looking at these resumes, and you got guys that, you know, in 6 years were in four different churches.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what's going on? What's going on here? There, and again, because the ladder system is creating so much urgency for you to get the next thing, to make the next move, and to not get stuck, whatever that means. These guys are underdeveloped in some key ways. And yeah, it just becomes a kind of a self-defeating circle spiral.
It seems to me, in just the conversation I'm listening to, it's just like a serious observation of deficiency in relationship, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's like, hey, let's do the thing. We've all seen this, right? And I do think it's very, very much connected to the way of the world that everybody's operating in, right? Yeah. And we've applied it in, but it's all about doing something instead of relating to somebody. That's what I'm hearing from you, Chad. Like, so maybe you can explain to us a situation you're in right now. Maybe you're in maybe a lane with somebody. What does that look like as opposed to being on the ladder with somebody?
Yeah. So for us, I'll give you an example. We have a seminary class that we have on Mondays. We have about 15 leaders that are in that class. All of them are elders, staff, residents, interns, that type of person. And I say at the very beginning of that class, we're going to be running in the senior leader lane during this class. And so what we tend to do is at each, we have three lanes here at Building 28. We have a member lane, a leader lane, and a senior leader lane. In each of those lanes, we have developmental, devotional work that's happening at different speeds. So again, this isn't about climbing a ladder. It's about what speed do you need to run at developmentally to grow? Where are you at? What season of life are you in? And so we might have someone that spends a season in the senior leader lane, and they come to me and say, hey, I think that I need to tone it down. I think this is a lot. The speed is a lot. There's no demotion talk. We just move them into the leader lane. We slow the pace down.
Yeah.
Some of the reading content might change, the level of stuff we're doing together. There's a lot of things that we kind of change. We dial down in the leader lane. And then, of course, again, in the member lane, where the entire church is being led at that pace. And that's kind of our church-wide pace. And so we have six disciple focuses, for example, at Building 28. We're going to hit on all of those focuses throughout the year in sermon series and how we build curriculum for kids all the way through students and everything else. And so we're going to make sure the entire church is able to be developed in that at that speed. And then, you know, at the senior leader lane, for example, you're still going to be getting the same focuses. You're going to be getting them at greater intensity depending on your spiritual maturity, where you're at in life, your calling, your giftedness, a ton of things. But it keeps everyone on the same track. And that's the thing. Like, our destination is Christlikeness as a church, and we're all together on the same road. The lane is irrelevant, really, at the end of the day. It's all about the season of life, the calling, the giftedness, and so on. So
Yeah, so the lane is all about the person that's being formed, not about the person who's forming. And so it's all relationship.
That's it. Yeah, it's highly tuned to where that individual needs to be in this season and what Christ-likeness being developed looks like for them particularly.
And so a great model for this is Jesus modeled this for us. And I love how you broke it down, the 72, the 12, the 3. And not because some mattered more, but because proximity, assignment, and readiness differed with those three different groups. Same mission, different lanes. Speak into that a little bit.
Yeah, they had different levels of access with Jesus through the proximity piece. You just mentioned that. But it is interesting. I mean, Jesus could have built anything he wanted there. And he didn't build a ladder. Like, he did not build a ladder. He built relationships at different levels of proximity. And so that, for me, tells me, okay, Jesus doesn't disciple people in tiers of value. He disciples them in circles of proximity. That's very different. Tiers and circles are very different. Mm. Looking at the model from the perspective of Jesus, I think when you see access wasn't based on it was based on assignment, not value. So that's really key. The three, the inner circle that Jesus had, they were discipled at a higher rate of intensity due to their proximity to Jesus than the 12 or the 72. And so, yeah, it also tells me as a pastor, like, it's not wise to treat everyone the same because they're not. Even developmentally, that's unwise to do that. Mm-hmm. I think that's another kind of let's treat everyone the same way. I think Jesus, like, I don't see Jesus doing that. I see Jesus tailoring discipleship relationship to that individual and where they're at and what their ultimate calling was going to be. I think Jesus, knowing Jesus could have built anything and he didn't build a ladder is extremely significant for sure.
I think what you said, proximity, is the New Testament word. It doesn't mean like classroom. It's more of an apprentice word. And it's not necessarily speed. I think in the Mishnah, it says, the rabbis would use this phrase, may you be covered in the dust of your rabbi. Meaning as you walked in the closeness of proximity to your teacher, you would be covered in the dust of their feet. Meaning the closeness to your teacher was the importance, not necessarily sitting in a classroom and learning. And I think, like you talked about, like pace and stuff, I think that's so important. It's not so much which lane you're in, it's in the proximity to the teacher, you know. And I think of like Mary and Martha, like in Luke chapter 10, where she's busy about doing a bunch of different things and serving. And she goes, don't you care that I'm doing all this stuff? And he goes, your sister has chosen that thing that is needful. And that was proximity. And I think that's so, so important because we teach a lot of times in our churches, just naturally, it's about activity instead of intimacy. And I think we miss a lot of spiritual formation. We hurt a lot of people in our congregations, not intentionally, but because it's just culturally of what we do. So I thought that was a really good point about would you say spheres instead of tiers?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that I think that's so vital. And for our people to understand that it's not necessarily pace, it's not necessarily running. I think it was Henry Newman that wrote the book where he studied the fourth century fathers, the desert fathers, those that fled Constantine, and basically the premise, I haven't read this book in a while, basically the premise of this book was the influence that Rome had on the church and why these early church fathers fled into the desert. They said that the three things, it wasn't necessarily the city, but it was the influence that the city had on the church, the culture that had on the church. And I remember these three words, and it kind of reminds me of this. The three words that they used was they watched the church turned into a system of compulsion, popularity, and power. Mm-hmm. Basically, the people were they had this compulsion of, you know, serving and the Rome's influence. And then it became a position of popularity and influence. And then it became a position of power. And I almost see the direct parallels with our Roman with Roman culture here as in America, like we still have that popularity, that compulsion to serve. You know, we kind of elevate the big personalities, like not necessarily, you know, Miss Betty who sits on the front row that spends her hours in prayer room for everybody. You know, we look at the guy that's boisterous, that has the big personality. So I just think that's really good stuff. And it's just, it's interesting to me how there's a lot of parallels. And I think we hurt a lot of people in the process unintentionally.
For sure. I think what you highlight shapes what people chase in your church.
Mm-hmm.
So by over celebrating platform and under celebrating everyday obedience, we're teaching something.
Yeah.
We're teaching something. And so I think making the heroes of your discipleship formation process, and it is always a process. It is a learning of Christ over decades. Make those heroes that sweet lady on the front row who is praying for her pastor every single morning at 5 a.m. and walking with Jesus faithfully as a widow now for 20 years. Like, make her the heroes. Like make people like her, make people like the faithful deacon who shows up and is opening the church up every Sunday for years or holding the door, make them the heroes. And so what you celebrate is what your people will chase. And I think that's a big thing, making the pursuit of Christ and his likeness, the aim and pointing to faithful people who are doing it, whether they have platform or not, is so important.
Yeah, Chad, you got me thinking here. A lot, by the way. I think we're all kind of like cogs and our brains are churning, but I was wondering, like, maybe there's a pastor listening right now and he's like, what do I do, man? We got the ladder, and maybe they're feeling a little bit like, dang, maybe this is part of the big problem. What would you say to him? Like, what is your advice to a pastor listening right now?
Yeah. I think that where I would start is surround yourself with some of the godliest people in your church regularly and ask them what made them into the image of Christ over a long period of time, and start with conversations at that level. Start with conversations with the people you want to point other people in the congregation and say, follow them as they follow Christ, and start there. And then from a programmatic standpoint, it's really as simple as changing the final destination, the final approach. If you can get a pastor to abandon the hierarchical ascent model for a lanes approach that is going towards Christ likeness, all of the other stuff you can spend the next 10 years slowly implementing or changing. But if you continue to use your hierarchical structures and systems as the pathway of godliness and discipleship, I think you're stuck. And I think you have to decide, I'm not using the ladder anymore, and I'm going to spend time with really godly people in the church, and I'm going to learn what formed them too, whether it's time in the Word, whatever it might be, and then establish, like, this is where we're heading. We're all heading towards Christ likeness, and it starts with that directional piece. The end goal is Christ likeness. Like, that's where we're heading. And so I think starting there and all the other pieces, like I tell guys all the time that I have taught this to, what focuses you decide to use, what curriculum is totally irrelevant compared to your commitment to not making discipleship a promotion game. So it really is, like, that's the starting point. And there's no magic formula to this. It's literally just abandoning that model and deciding we're all going to pursue Christ together. It's just going to be in different ways, at different times, in different seasons, in different speeds, different proximity. But it is a paradigm shift. It's not a programmatic shift. The programmatic shift comes after the paradigm. And so it's an embracing of that model. This is how I think Jesus did it, and we're going to do it this way.
What would you say to the individual listening who is at a church, if you will, that is a ladders-based, and they feel like they are not moving up, and because of that, they are put to the sideline or, you know, back road, if you will. What would your encouragement be to them, because they are in a system that is this ladders type system? How can you motivate them and encourage them right now, Chad?
Yeah. Excuse me. I think number one, I would say that individual, don't leave your church. Help point the church to something healthier in from the seat that God's given you, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say don't abandon the church. That's always my first instinct, is to tell someone to hang in there.
Yeah.
And be a voice of reason, and be a voice of encouragement for your pastors and leaders. I would also say, lanes not levels is one thing, but knowing that your identity is not in a position it's in Christ is a biblical thing that's undeniable.
Sure.
And so you need to be reminded that there is no position that's going to fill the God-shaped hole in your heart. And it'll never be enough. Every lead pastor I know would tell you that it didn't do it for them. Maybe they thought it would, but the position didn't give them what they were looking for. Only Christ can do that. And so, slay the idol in your heart that is positional achievement and attainment. Again, none of these other suggestions programmatically or likewise will do anything if you do not slay that dragon every day and for the rest of your life. So I would try to encourage them to be a part of a positive change and go to work killing sin in their hearts and destroying the idol of position. It will not do anything for you. And then I would say, assess what you're doing by your level of faithfulness, not the position you've attained.
Mm-hmm.
So be where God has you. If you're a student pastor right now, be a faithful student pastor and rest in God's sovereignty and wherever he has you. He loves you, and your identity is ultimately not going to be found in anything that ministry provides, but only what Christ has secured.
Yeah, my thought was, a lot of the ladder system to me is kind of antithetical to the gospel in many ways. I'm kind of hard on it because I'm more of an organic, and our church is more of an organic discipleship of the word being passed between brothers and sisters, more of an organic model. We try to bake that in with more one-on-one mentoring, putting people with mature people. So we do a little bit of a different model. But I think about like Philippians, Philippians 2, I think it's like 6, I forget. I wasn't ready for this, but a lot of, and Paul is not.
Just make it up.
Okay. I'll give you the Pastor James version. Yeah.
Second opinions.
The book is, but, Paul, that part of Philippians where it talks about that he was made into the likeness. A lot of the scholars will say that's not, Paul's quoting an earlier writing of a hymn that Christians would sing and remind themselves of. And so he became in the likeness, basically it shows that he descended down. And now we've almost created a culture where that we're ascending up. And so a lot of the early church, they had a phrase basically the way up is down. But I think almost like if we want people to be Christ-like, it's to really walk in humility and humbleness and proximity to Christ-likeness. And a lot of times, if we're encouraging people to move up a ladder and actually giving credibility to, oh, you've arrived and you become mature because you've now had a position. I mean, do you think it's detrimental, or like, do you think it's like, I know you mentioned it's not, I'll just play the devil's advocate. Like, I know it's not programmatic shift, but should it be? You know, should this be something that we reevaluate? Like the Reformation really was based upon a lot of coming out of the hierarchies and the power and the popularity of, you know, the Catholic Church. And like, maybe is it something, maybe can I just be a little bit of rebellious and say, maybe it is something that we should look at as should we shift? And is it right or is it wrong? You know, I know that might offend people, but maybe it's just a thought that we need to have among us pastors, because we have a counseling ministry in our church. And you know what the number one counseling that we do in our church, you know what it is? It's church hurt from people that have just been like chewed up and spit out of churches. That's our number one session that we counsel people on. People from other churches that have been chewed up and spit out, and they're tired, they're burned out, they don't want to go back to church, they're gun shy. I mean, and I'm talking a majority. It's kind of been eye opening to us in our counseling ministry in our church.
Yeah, I appreciate your like call to rebel here, actually. I think there's like I think there are things you can do as a pastor right away that can fundamentally change the trajectory of your church in making disciples in a far more healthy way. That's more lanes, not levels. And I'll give you an example. You can, as a pastor, say, I am going to, we're going to have three lanes here in this church. We're going to acknowledge that there's people at least in moving at three different rates of development and proximity, to me and to Christ at this time, whatever it might be. You can acknowledge that, hey, here's some lanes, and then you can actually start doing work in those lanes personally, like right away. So for example, it could be as easy as, you're obviously preaching to everyone on Sundays. So you're ministering to the entire member lane right now, whether you know it or not. So what are you pointing them towards? You know, what are you doing with your preaching calendar to point them? Like, what are you doing as you work yourself through books of the Bible to develop them? But then you can also meet with a handful of young leaders in your church that are exploring what it means to be a leader, maybe in their place of employment, whatever it might be. And then you can, you know, meet once a month or every couple weeks with a group of elders or senior leaders or aspiring pastors. Like, you can just start doing ministry in these different speeds with this different proximity, the 3, 12, and 72 kind of model. You can do that yourself. And I think that once you, that's kind of how this started with me, was let me kind of test this with myself. Like, let me see if I can find a way. I know I'm called to make disciples and I'm the lead pastor here. How can I do this in my own life? How can I make sure I'm pastoring people in these lanes? And, but yeah, that's something that, you can start doing that at any level, basically. And no matter what position you're in, you can start thinking in those terms and doing personal discipleship that way. I think if a lead pastor or senior pastor or whatever is not committed to doing this in their personal life, I really don't care what they say from the pulpit about it. Like, personally, mm-hmm. Like, if you're not serious about this personally, then pastorally you lose credibility. And so all the lead pastors I love spending time with, man, they're discipleship animals. And they're in people's lives, they're praying with people, they're reading books with young men, they're really getting in there and getting their hands dirty. So I think we can do this now. We can do this wherever you're at, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's not only is it, it's proximity. It's proximity to people as a pastor.
Yeah, I got to tell you guys, I think I might be the oldest guy on the call. And this is a confession. And I think this is really a revelation of generations. I think I'm Gen X, right? And you look at Gen X, we are independent. We're going to do what we're going to do. We're caught in the corporate ladder like we are. Like, look at everybody who's running the world right now. That's Gen X. Have an attitude of being a jerk. How many of the churches, James, are you're dealing with people who have church hurt, who are coming from churches that are led by Gen Xers? Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I think there's something to this. And like, my generation is just, we're just jerks. we're like the latchkey generation. Like, we're jerks. And this, it's really, I'm just being honest. It's like uncomfortable because we have a very large church. And I don't apologize for that. I think God is, it's a God story. You guys, most people mm-hmm. know our story, but we probably operate more in the latter. with almost like, I would say it's soft ladder. You know, we're not like rigid ladder, because I'm not a corporate guy. I'm a South Florida beach bum that just loves Jesus, and I'm intense about getting as many people to know him as possible. And so I've incorporated from my own generation some of these habits. Mm-hmm. And so this has been really, really good for me, Chad. And I think it's really good to challenge the thinking of people like myself, who, you know, I'm probably soft ladder. I'm not, but I love what you said. I don't take offense to it. I actually take it as a challenge, and I think it's helpful. And I hope there are other guys listening, ladies listening, who are thinking about this and saying, man, there's some things that we probably need to consider. And you're talking about James, I got to get the name of that book from Henry Newman, because going over there and seeing how the Roman Empire basically came in, and this, the church is just like rough and tumble. They're scrappy. They were relational. They were meeting in dank rooms, just sharing faith and reaching other people. And then, you know, Constantine comes, and basically the church just becomes the extension of the Roman Empire. And you can see how that is applying to this. Mm-hmm. Very good observation.
My concern is that, like, I'm a lead pastor. You guys can feel what I'm saying on this. Like, at some point, if the ladder system is the way, and I don't think it is, but if it's the way, where do we go but down from where we are? Why I think there's so many guys that wrestle with what it means to be at the top of the ladder, and it does something to your soul that it's not designed to take.
Mm-hmm.
And
100%.
When we use language like, I'm sick of hearing about moral failures, man, and there was one a couple months ago, and I can't, now it's, I'm blanking on who it was, but it was, you know, another famous guy that, I thought a lot of, and I remember just looking at it on X or whatever, and just flinging my phone across the living room. Like, I don't even want to look at it. Like, I don't even want to see it. It's so discouraging. Mm-hmm. I think that when you view things through a ladder system, one of the really dangerous things is it teaches you, you have to stay at the top. No matter what, and you start changing to keep that place at the top of the ladder, and there's only one way to go from there, and that's down. Mm-hmm. And so many moral failures, I think, are accelerated by the ladder system. They're weary because it took years to get there. When they get there, you're going to pry that position out of their cold, dead fingers, because they worked really hard and they stepped on a lot of people to get there. And that's the mentality so often from a lot of the guys that fall. And I think that what we can learn from Gen X, and I appreciate about Gen X as a millennial, is I appreciate the organization they brought to the church for effectiveness. So, like, a soft ladder to me was needed, I think, in the church as the church grew and became more complex, and we're just dealing with churches sizes that we didn't have 200 years ago. Yeah. I think that was all helpful. I think that realizing that there's a place for ladders and hierarchy and structure organizationally without contaminating the formation pool is where it's at. I think that's,
it's really good.
I think that's what we have to think through as pastors for the next, you know, for the next 20, 30 years. I think that's going to be the challenge.
And you know what, Chad, I think you're a quality voice to champion it. Mm-hmm. Thank you. You're easy to listen to, my friend.
Got that smooth voice, man.
No,
I know what you're saying.
I appreciate it. Yeah. Not Barry White, not quite Barry White, but you know. Yeah, more Rick Astley, you know. Blue-eyed soul.
I'm going to spend at least the next couple years thinking about this, because I'm working on a doctoral project on lanes, not levels. So, so lots of thought and research to go still.
You remind me of a friend of mine that is extremely, he's a pastor up here, and he's extremely passionate about discipleship. And he made a pretty radical shift in his church. He said, he went from a single pastor model to a plurality of elders, and he explained why. He said, I don't trust myself with sole power, sole authority. I don't trust myself with being at the top alone. But he said the second thing that they made that was drastically different, he says, you will not be an elder or a leader in this church if you are not at least discipling one person. And that was like their baseline rule. And like he said, that was like one of the rules that just changed the culture in his church. Like he goes, this is our fundamental mission. And if our leaders are not doing this, what are we modeling to our people? You know? And so I love that thought process, like of being bold to kind of make that change as leaders, like even as ourselves, because it's easy as a lead pastor to not make disciples. And I think that's what people don't, it's easy to manage the system, right? It's easy to let the ship drive itself, and delegate and not to make disciples yourself. And I think that's one of the main things that we should be doing.
For sure. One of the things that, when I came here and was, trying to take the make disciples culture into this new church that God had brought me to. One of the first things I did was I had all the elders and all the staff, myself included, at every staff meeting and every elder meeting share, who's your Timothy, who's your Barnabas, who's your Paul. So someone you're pouring into, someone you're encouraging, someone that's encouraging you, and making sure you have all three of those particular people. So when I do one-on-ones with staff, like I was doing today, we talk about how those relationships are going. We talk about needing to find a new Paul. This person's moving. We talk about all that. And so, yeah, I think if you can't build this into the DNA of how leaders and staff operate in your church, it's really hard to ever get traction in the congregation.
Right.
And I think that's huge. And also, like I ask staff to hold me accountable. So I'm one of the people that gives an update once a month at all the staff meetings. So that's been huge for my own life, because I have to go find a Paul when I need to put, you know what I mean? Like, okay, who's an older man I can like get to pour into my life? And I've got tons of Timothys and tons of Barnabas. A Paul for me is a little challenging at times, but it keeps me accountable. And I think accountability fuels discipleship and culture change in your church too.
That's good.
Thanks, Chad. That was good stuff, Chad.
Yeah, thanks, Chad. It's good, challenging stuff. It should be. You know, I think we should always be up for a challenge, right? Because this is what it's all about. It's about helping people,
no doubt,
follow Jesus. And that's the most important thing in the world. And to be challenged in our processes and thinking is really important.
The kingdom is not a race you win. It's a relationship you walk. That's kind of the overarching thing. And we do that day by day and step by step. And so maybe the most spiritual thing that you, the listener, can do today is stop striving and start abiding. Just be. Stop measuring. Start following. And maybe stop asking, am I ahead, but start asking, am I with Jesus? Like, look at where you are and just say, am I following Jesus? Because if you're with him, that's where you need to be. And so maybe just take a breath and follow the way of Jesus as you learn each day to become a little bit more like him. And I think it's good. Chad, it's good to have you on the podcast. Great conversation. I know it'll spur on many more conversations. And so thanks for being here with us today. But our first guest, congratulations, you did it. Yeah,
thanks for having me, guys. Love the conversation. Appreciate you guys.
Chris and James, good to see you, boys. We'll see you back next month. All right.
See you guys.
Bye now.